It's the Brouhaha Podcast with Steve Jackson and Mark Carpenter.
It is Brouhaha. Mark Carpenter, for a long time, beginning in 1971 at Anchor in San Francisco.
Yeah, how you doing today? Good to be here.
Good, brother.
We've just been doing some great beers out in the green rooms, and we've got some really good ones to talk about today.
Yeah, you know, I walked out to the green room to give you a hug, and you said, life is good.
Life is good, buddy.
And I could not agree more. Mark Carpenter, and of course, her Linda is back with us.
Cheers. Okay. I just opened up a nice Framboise Rosé Gosa. We're going to talk about Gosa beers and what they are today, because I just saw the look on your face. You'll have to try this.
I will.
It's got rosé in it.
Gosa.
Gosa.
Okay.
It goes well with everything.
Yeah. Hey, and I'm Italian, so it's like, you know, the refrigerator is called the Isobox.
That's it.
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Our friend Fal Allen is back with us from Mendocino, one of the main beer guys, I believe, in the state. He's a beer expert, a brewer, and an author. Fal, good to see you again, man.
Great to see you. Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
It's our pleasure. You drove up down from Mendocino?
I drove down, yeah. Not
from
so bad.
Boonville. How's the smoke there? How's the fires there?
The Anderson Valley is pretty smoky today. It's actually nicer down here, but we've been pretty lucky.
So far, yeah. And
yeah,
let's just
have.
Hope it stays that way. He is with Anderson Valley Brewing Company in Boonville. Give me the history, as I always ask, the history of, Anderson Valley as a beer, a craft beer region, and specifically Anderson Valley Brewing Company.
Well, you know, Anderson Valley used to be a main hop growing region back in the 1800s, but no more. Powdery mildew came in and changed all that. Hmm. But the brewery opened up in 1988. The then owner had some extra money, didn't know what to do with it, and his friend Dave Norfleet said, "Hey, what about one of those small brewery things?" And he said, why not? And they opened a brew pub in a tiny little town of 500 people. Most ill-conceived idea ever, maybe.
Anderson Valley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they quickly found that people were driving up from, you know, San Francisco to get the beer and taking it back. Particularly Dave Keane, who owns a Tornado, would drive up every couple weeks, pack his Honda Civic with kegs, and they actually had to push it out of the driveway. It was so heavy. And down the road it went. And the beer caught on in San Francisco, and in the mid-90s, they decided they'd switch to be from a brew pub to a production brewery because, you know, with 500 people in town, they weren't selling a whole lot of beer across the bar, mm-hmm. particularly during the winter.
So, it was a brew pub that was very early on in the business, and they did a festival every year that was really popular with all the Bay Area brewers in those days to travel up there for their beer festival. I think that was one festival that there were more brewers than anywhere else.
They still do. I spent the night there. That was fun.
Yeah, we still do. Usually 80 to 90 breweries and come and pour beer there. And there used to be 2 days a year that Sierra Nevada was closed, and it was Christmas and Boonville Beer Festival.
There you go.
And I thought that was a rumor. I asked Ken Grossman one day, and he said, yeah, but we're cutting that out. And they used to send more than 50 employees. Well, so they still send a lot. Yeah, they still send a lot of folks.
So, Fal, before I have to cut out because I'm going to the ELO concert tonight, yes, they are still alive, and yes, they are still playing. Of course, it's called Jeff Lynne's ELO now.
Yeah, they're playing at Ricardo's tonight at 8. So check out.
Yeah, in Oakland, actually. I'm pretty excited at Oracle. So you have a new book coming out about Gosa, and I'm drinking a Gosa right now. We all are. That's what's in your glass there. Framboise, which is raspberry. Rosé. Are you calling it rose or rosé?
Rosé Gosa.
But what?
It looks like a rosé.
Yeah, taste it. I think this is very close, a little bit closer to wine that you might actually like. But for our listeners out there.
I like it.
I know. It's great, huh?
Nice.
Yeah, so it's really
refreshing.
Hey, Mikey,
refreshing. I like it.
What is the Gosa style of beer? I know you have a book out on it. It's important enough, and it's like 1,000 years old. So there's a book about it, which is great. But.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I just finished the book. It should hit the shelves by the end of this month. And Gosa is one of the older beer styles in the world. It's over 1,000 years old. People could debate that, but, you know, I think...
You did your research.
Yeah, I did the research. It's at least 800, close enough. But it's a style of beer that came out of Germany, and you have to think back past the Rheinheitsgebot, which is 1500, I think, 1540. Back in the day, a lot of beers were very different than Pilsners that come out of Germany today. And there were all kinds of beers. A lot of sour beers were out there, and Goza is a sour beer. It's made soured with lactic acid bacteria. And it the other hallmark of this beer is it's very light. It's a wheat beer, and it has a little bit of salt in it. It has a saline quality to it. And some people think that was from the water of the River Goza where the beer originated, but that's probably not the case. It's probably that brewers trying to imitate the beers from Goslar added salt to it to try to mimic some of the mineral content of that river.
Weird.
Yeah, very strange. Strange beer.
I've told people it's like almost like a Gatorade with electrolytes.
Is that
beer.
What this is?
Is that this?
Yeah. Oh, that has
the base
raspberry.
Beer is a Goza, and then we've added some raspberry and rose hips to it.
But Goza means sour?
It doesn't mean sour.
Because I hate sour beer. I'm sorry.
Well,
but this doesn't taste sour to me.
No, it's just tart.
Yeah.
Tart I can handle.
The Goza name's more from the town it's from, right?
Yeah. It's named after the River Goza, which runs through the town of Goslar, which the town is named after the river. Goslar means an encampment by a river that has a lot of water that runs through it. So Goza is, you know, its hallmarks are wheat beer, sour, and slightly saline.
And the origins?
It came out of what we consider Eastern Germany.
Okay.
From
that town.
Yeah, from a town of Goslar.
It's
a tiny little town. It was never bombed during any of the wars, which is kind of cool. So it's
still... they had good beer. Nobody wanted to mess with it.
That actually is a reason for a lot of places in Europe that didn't get...
Sure.
Yeah, didn't get bombed.
Yeah. So it's well-preserved.
Mark, your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, it's a style I like. I've actually brewed one at a brewery in Norway as a collaboration, you know, and it's a style I like very much. You can taste the salt in it. I like the saltiness. I love the saltiness of the beer. And you said it's, you know, you don't like sours, but this is tart. And that's because they kind of control the amount of sourness. They do it in the kettle, as Fal's doing, where they loose the bacteria in the kettle. It makes the lactic acid, and it gets sour. But then it's boiled, so it stops. It doesn't get any more sour than that.
No, you're right. You know? Tart.
Yeah. Yes.
Tart. And not sour, and I do like this.
They're fresh, refreshing, good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, good.
Great
summertime
beer.
Drink. Yeah.
Well, later in the show, we have a beer that we sour the other way. But I think, you know, all sour beer should be tart and not actually puckering sour. And I think some brewers they've gotten carried away.
I agree.
Folks. Well, I remember having – the first time I had a Goza was right in the other studio with one of your beers. And, like, so you can get these beers. And, actually, you're one of the first ones who was doing like locally, like, small brewery doing canning. And you were canning this Goza. And I was like, what is this? This is so good. After I got all these messages from my girlfriends asking me what you looked like because they liked your voice on the air.
I'm sorry, I'm going to be disappointed.
And then and he's a firefighter and
a brewmaster.
Let's
have a voice off here, Fal.
Okay, then.
Let's see what happens
I'll
here.
I'll stay out of that competition.
All right, ladies. Fal Allen, beer expert, brewer, author, great guy from... The Alexander Valley
Anderson
Brewing
Valley
Company.
Brewing Company.
Anderson Valley. What did I say? Alexander Valley?
No. Yeah, you've got wine on the mind. I understand.
I usually do.
We have great wine here, too.
All right. We're going to take our bottom of the hour break. We'll be back with Mark Carpenter, her Linda, and the great...
Actually, I'm running out to the concert.
Oh, you're going to see ELO.
I'm
going to
go see ELO, and I know all the words. Because my father...
He's a big ELO fan?
He's a huge ELO fan, but Jeff Lynne's got to be about my dad's age now.
Yeah, I'm sure he is.
Yeah.
No, they did some great stuff. I have a lot of respect for him. I would not drive to Ricardo's even or around the corner to hear them, but God bless them, and I respect them. All right, Herlinda, we'll see you next week.
Thanks. I'm going to take a couple beers with me, though.
Please do. We are in the middle of the Hop Monk Drive brouhaha. Of course, Mark Carpenter from Anchor is here. And also, our friend Fal Allen from Mendocino. He's an expert. He's an author. He, when it comes to beer, he knows his stuff. And he's with the Mendocino friends of ours.
Anderson Valley Brewing.
Great to see you again, Mitt.
Well, thank you.
And Val, he's written this book on Goza, but you've done other style books on beer styles, haven't you? Yeah.
Yeah, Dick Cantwell and I co-authored a book on barley wine about 1,000 years ago, making us some of the oldest brewers out there.
Talk about barley wine.
Well, you know, barley wine.
You don't hear much about that, eh?
No. You know, it used to be a bigger deal than it is now.
Yeah.
Anchor had a great barley wine. Sierra Nevada has a great barley wine. We make a barley wine. But, you know, when the Brewers Association came to us, and Dick and I had already discussed this, they said if they ever ask either one of us to do a book, we're going to say, yeah, and we're going to do it together, and we're going to do barley wine because it's the biggest beer you can make. It's the strongest. And if you can make a great barley wine, theoretically, you should be able to make good everything else because it's the toughest to make,
really?
Highest alcohol, most hops. So that's why we wanted to write it.
And Mark, he mentioned that Anchor did a barley wine. Explain.
We were actually the first barley wine in the U.S., believe it or not, because of Fritz Maytag, my old boss, took a tour of England and was looking around at different beers, and he discovered barley wine, and it was in a funny way. He'd only see it, you know, a couple little old ladies sitting in the corner of the pub having this small bottle of beer, and he'd ask the bar owner about it, and he said, oh, yeah, that's barley wine. He says, no one drinks that. You know, it's just these little ladies coming in.
The old ladies love it, but, yeah.
But that is exactly the type of product that Fritz would love because you bring it to America, you start out, and you have no place to go but up.
Well, explain how to make barley wine.
Well, barley wine it's called barley wine because it's high in alcohol, which it gets close to that of English wines. English wines tend to be a little lower in alcohol, and this they would get close to that alcohol, but only using barley. And they used a lot of hops, and they normally would age it a long time. And so we made a barley wine, and we put it out, and they usually served it in small bottles. And we, for years, put it out in a little 7-ounce bottle. We eventually abandoned that because
it didn't sell that great.
It's funny. Sierra came out with their Bigfoot in a 12-ounce, when we finally switched to the 12-ounce, we actually charged the same price that we used to charge for the 7-ounce. And I had a customer call me. They put him on the phone with me, and he said that he was really didn't like it that we came out with the 12 ounces, you know, because he was always so happy with the 7-ounce.
Even though he was paying the same amount.
I said to him, well, you're paying the same price. So drink 7, toss the rest out.
Nice. So barley wine. You guys aren't doing it, are you?
We make one usually once a year. Okay. We're making one this year. But they're hard to make. They take a long time.
And what are the characteristics?
Over 8% alcohol, usually 8 to 12.
Okay.
Americans now probably push that a little bit further. They're usually relatively hoppy, whereas a Pilsner will be maybe 32 IBUs. Barley wine will be 45 to up close to 100.
And as far as the taste, I mean, is it...
Well, they're
it's
aged.
It's not sour, right? It's not...
No, they're usually rather sweet. They're aged for a long time. And so they can have a sherry or Madeira flavor. They're very often raisiny, plummy. They got a lot of those ripe, pitted fruit flavors.
Really?
And, yeah, they're not your easy drinking beer. They're made usually about this time of year or early fall for consumption in the winter in you know February, March months. And so you want a big beer that's got some alcohol behind it, sit behind the fire and
get warm.
Yeah. And they're only relatively popular. They're fun to make, and I think a lot of breweries do them for the celebration of winter.
Yeah. And from a brewing standpoint, at Anchor, we had to fill our mash tun 3 times in order to get enough wort to fill the kettle because you're starting with so much sugar. When we boil the kettle with Anchor steam, we'd have about 12% sugar. And for barley wines, we want about 24% sugar.
Whoa.
And, yeah. and so you're having to run these mash tuns constantly in order to fill your kettle. So it's a problem for growing.
Doesn't sound like I want any barley wine.
No. Oh, you'd like it, I think.
Really?
But I don't like the sweet. You like sherry or port? Never?
No, you might not like it.
You might not like it.
Yeah. Once in a while. I mean, if it's a really expensive port or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and then I go, well.
After a nice dinner.
Yeah, okay, yeah. That's one thing.
See, you might like it then.
Well, one of the things you guys did that I just loved was you made a small beer out of the, you know, you did your first runnings for the barley wine, and then you made a small beer from the rest of the grain bill. And that is traditional, and I think it's awesome, and I loved that beer. You know, you got a lot of the same flavors, but with less alcohol. I love that.
Yeah, the small beer was good because you only used this the first runnings. You had this second runnings that you wound up throwing away. But we would save those second runnings, and then we made this small beer, which in England they actually gave to school kids.
Yeah, it was very traditional. Make a small beer after
really?
You made a big beer.
Okay, and so the small beer,
low in alcohol, 3-4%.
Okay.
And
you give it to kids for nap time? Or
young people used to drink it in England because low in alcohol. But I think small beer is even mentioned in Shakespeare, not in an adoring way. It's kind of people made fun of it, you know, like small potatoes, small beer.
Interesting. Is this the gold that I just took a taste of?
So we have the Boonville Gold.
Yeah.
Well, you know, beers have been getting lighter. I think there's a new trend away from the super strong hoppy IPAs, mm-hmm. and not for everybody. And I think some brewers have realized that in order to reach a broader market, you have to make a beer that appeals to more people. And in that trend, we decided to make a beer. We went out and got a bunch of these lower alcohol, lighter beers. And Coors Banquet came up the winner of our taste test.
Really?
Yeah. Not kidding. And we thought, well, you know, we can do slightly, you know, more exciting than Coors Banquet. And I like Coors Banquet, but...
Like an upscale Coors Banquet.
Yeah, a little more flavor, but not a whole lot. Nothing that's going to frighten anybody. And so we came up with our Boonville Gold. I think it's a very nice beer. It's kind of Pilsner-esque, but a little hoppier than Coors. Easy drinking. Summer beer, certainly.
Yeah, I would agree with him. I think it's a very nice beer. And those are the two markets that we see right now that people want. You have this low end for the... Or this lower alcohol, lighter beers, and then you have these very hoppy IPAs. And Fal, I'm trying one right now called Hopizer that hits the middle. You know, I said a couple weeks ago how much I liked pale ales.
Yeah, me too.
And how I thought that was a section of the market that customers were going away from. And I think it's something they shouldn't overlook. And this Hopizer, I think, is just a delicious beer.
Well, thank you.
And it's in a can.
And it has Anderson Valley. Playing frisbee golf. Now, you know what a beer is, right?
A bear?
A bear with antlers.
It's a combination of a bear and a deer.
That's right, a beer, yeah.
And they're playing... Frisbee golf.
See,
on
it's
label.
Been too long since you've been in, and I haven't been completely tracking down Anderson Valley, but I love that. Hopizer, Hyzer.
And it's a delicious pale ale. It just really hits the spot.
Oh, thank you.
What are the hops?
Well, the predominant hop is Equinaut.
Uh-huh.
And we wanted to make a new pale ale, and I thought, well, let's take it down a notch from the alcohol perspective. And take it up a notch from our Palico Pale, which has a lot of hops in it, but in the wrong places, I thought, maybe. You know, we could mix it up a little bit. And so we put a lot more of those hops in the dry hopping. And so we have a very aromatic, not too bitter, pale ale. And I think the alcohol content is quite nice, 4.9. Can have a few.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's...
Still make it home?
It's perfect. I assume you do it in draft also.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, but if you're in, great places like Willoughby's, I'm sure I'll be carrying it. It's just, it's a fabulous beer.
Yeah, I think I have it on at Hop Monk sometimes.
There
you go. I don't
know
about tonight. Maybe I'll go find out.
Go find out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just tell them you're with me and they let you in for you.
Okay.
Oh, they already know you. You're Fal Allen.
I drop my name, they're like, who? I will drop your name.
Fal Allen with Anderson Valley Brewing Company. How many years again?
How many years has
Anderson
Valley? Have I been there?
You there?
I've been there about 12 years off and on. More like 18 off and on. And they've been around since 88, so
yeah,
over 30 years.
Mendocino County, folks.
Yep.
Well, you drove down from Mendo today. Again, we kind of mentioned this earlier in this segment, but what's going on with the fires? I mean, because we're following everything here.
Well, Mendocino's having a pretty hard time.
Yeah.
Mendo Lake County has, I think, 5 or 6 fires going on right now. Some of them are quite big. I think that the Mendo complex just surpassed the Carr Fire for size, over 100,000 acres.
Yeah, it's called the Mendocino Complex Fire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a combination of 2 or 3 different fires, and they've had nothing but bad luck. The weather conditions have not been favorable for firefighting.
No. And these winds that are – we were talking about this with David Wallace Wells from New York Magazine as our first guest today. He wrote an article. He's a climate writer for them and deputy editor, and his article was unfortunately titled, How Did the End of the World Become Old News? And we were talking about Europe and all the fires in Greece and other areas going on, and it's nonstop. And then I said, yeah, well, there's no climate change, obviously.
Clearly there's not.
Yeah. And he was all over that. And I heard Hopland.
Oh, yeah.
There's one getting closer to Hopland.
There are two in Hopland. The river fire, and there was one, I don't remember the name of it, but it started, I believe, yesterday from a motorcycle crash just south of town. They got on that pretty quick, and I believe that it's mostly contained.
Yeah.
They've gotten it away from structures.
We're hearing that.
Yeah. And, you know, in Anderson Valley, where I'm a volunteer firefighter, we've been very, very lucky. It's cooler there, and we have ocean breezes that bring moisture in. But even there, we've had 4 fires in July, and they just are popping up everywhere from different causes. And I think if you get, you know, you get away from the ocean over into, you know, the Ukiah Valley area or Lake County, it's just so dry.
Yep.
It doesn't take hardly anything to start a fire. I've seen them start from lawnmowers.
Sure.
People got to be careful.
No. And it's rugged country. It's very difficult to fight it once it gets going.
Yeah.
Yeah, but look what happened in October here.
Yes.
Oh, my God, yes.
Coffee Park, Fountain Grove,
yeah.
Santa Rosa, not rugged country. For the most part, not like what we're talking about up in Mendocino or Lake County. And, you know, it's so frightening. And we were talking with David Wallace Wells from New York Magazine about the, you know, I mentioned a lot of the folks who are in the know in the state of California, including Jerry Brown. I assume he's in the know. But everyone's been using the phrase, the new normal.
New normal.
Yeah. And that is just so frightening. And now we're in August, and God only knows. Look what's going on up north, Mendocino and Lake. Hopland. And if it starts coming down this way, I don't know. I'm flipping out.
Yeah, it's very scary. And the Santa Rosa fires last year were wind-driven.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, once a fire starts and it gets driven by the wind like that, there's just no stopping it. And I think that's
creates,
the really frightening part.
It creates
part.
The fire tornadoes.
Yes.
That we talked about yesterday with one of our firefighter guys. And it creates its own...
its own weather.
Yeah.
Literally.
I know.
And it's horrifying. And
totally.
We've lost, you know, thousands of homes. And between the Santa Rosa fire and the Carr fire and the complex fire, we've lost, you know, thousands of homes. And where are these people going? I think it's eventually going to affect California.
Yeah.
They're going to have to leave.
Exactly.
There'll be no place to live.
No, I know.
Very sad.
Given the expense of just trying to live in this state and this area in particular, it's so frightening.
Yeah, the cost of rebuilding, the lack of labor to do it.
Yeah.
It's not a good scenario.
All right. Enough with the depressing stuff. Let's check traffic, which is probably depressing, but then we'll be back to be happier on California. I mean, I'm on the brouhaha. All right, we're back.
Yep.
For some reason, we're talking about the cocktail old fashions, but it's actually brouhaha. The great Fal Allen from Anderson Valley Brewing drove down today from Mendocino. Okay.
And they, we're talking about Mark, it because about we're this. Drinking his Old Fashioned, Anderson Valley Old Fashioned. And Fal can give us the rundown, but this is aged in wild turkey barrels, and it's 8.3% alcohol by weight.
Whoa.
And it just has this wonderful taste, but give us the whole story.
I like this.
Oh, thank you.
I used to, you know, once in a while, once five times a year, maybe I'll order an Old Fashioned. I like Old Fashioneds. I've never had an Old Fashioned beer like this. This is cool.
Well, it's a kind of a new trend in brewing, that making beers taste like cocktails. Mm-hmm. And my boss came to me and said, why don't we try an Old Fashioned beer? And I thought, I didn't say it out loud, but I thought, oh, my God, I don't think we can do that. And
oh, that's good.
We put together a beer.
Isn't it great?
It's got cherry in it. It's got some orange peel in there.
Yeah.
We aged it in Wild Turkey bourbon barrels for 6 months, and then we added Angostura bitters. And I'll be darned if it doesn't taste like an old-fashioned cocktail.
No, it's amazing.
Does. You hit the mark. You
what's
really
the alcohol on this one?
I think it's 8.3
on the label here.
Yeah, it's a little strong for me, so I'm not going to drink like a whole pint.
I took a sip
pints.
And I'm done. Yeah, I mean, but luckily my Raul, my driver and valet, is here. So,
very good.
Yeah, I don't
very
have to
good.
Worry about it.
But that would honestly be a great cocktail if you were wanted an old fashioned and you were in a beer bar.
Right.
This would be a great substitute.
This is amazing, Phil.
Well, we got lucky. We hit the mark, and I was as surprised as anybody. But, you know, it just shows you that you got to, if you're going to make beer and stay in business, we got to start pushing the envelope.
Yeah.
Do some unusual things.
You're right.
That is fun in brewing when you're trying for a goal and you actually hit it.
Yeah. I was very surprised. Yeah.
Malt beverage aged in wild turkey bourbon barrels. Anderson Valley, Old Fashioned. I just got the one-minute signal from Mike DeWald from Anderson Valley Brewing Company. So great to see Fal Allen again. Great, man.
Well, thank you.
The new book again?
The book's called Goza, Brewing an Ancient Beer in Modern Times, and it's going to be out the end of the month, and I think pre-sales start the 15th of this month.
Okay. We need to get you at least on the phone, because I feel guilty sometimes when you drive all the way down.
Well, don't feel bad.
Okay, well,
I'm happy to get out of work and come down here.
Okay, I don't imagine. So, yeah, if you can, before the release of the book, we'll talk more about it. Either
Absolutely.
Way, on the phone or come on in, even better.
All right, yeah. Be happy to come back down.
Great to see you, man.
Good to see you guys.
All right, and Mark Carpenter, we'll see you next Thursday.
Very good.